Morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Oh, I love that. Called to order the Senate Jobs and Economic Growth Committee. Welcome, members. We got another committee meeting where we kind of have it two halves. So thanks for being able to shift gears at a moment's notice. But what we wanted to start with today, members, is I guess I want to say Representative Sertich, but I think maybe Mr. Sertich is more accurate, at least right now. And we wanted to give him a chance to introduce himself and also introduce the IRRB, an acronym that when I first got here 8 years ago, I had no idea what that meant. So that'll be roughly the first half of the committee is discussion and listening to Mr. Sertich. And then we do want to get back to Senate File 1 and a discussion of the general economy in Minnesota and what we can do to lower the cost of doing business. So think of that as kind of the second half. And I want to be cognizant of the time, but also allow for some discussions with Mr. Sertich. I also understand that Mr. Sertich is making the rounds already, and I appreciate that. And as you and I discussed over the phone, we will start to move on confirmations, but I want to hear first that you've met with every member of the committee, both sides of the aisle, before we start pushing any of the paperwork. So thank you for I know you are about that. You are doing that. So I think at this point, members, well, let me just give you I think this is what I'll do. We'll turn it over to Mr. Sertich, and then maybe at that halftime shifting of gears, we'll talk a little bit more about the agenda for the rest of this week. We've got a committee meeting tomorrow where some new items have been kind of placed in front of us, and then, of course, we've got our trip up to Hibbing on Friday. Another reason why we wanted to meet with Mr. Sertich today. So thank you for letting me start with all that. And Mr. Sertich, we will hand it over to you. And you've already expressed a willingness to take questions at any point during your presentation. I think you'll find this committee pretty willing to ask questions at any time. So thank you and welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you very much. For the record, my name is Tony Sertich. I'm the commissioner of the IRRB, and it's an honor to be before you today. I'm going to take just a few slides to introduce this agency. I've joked once Governor Dayton appointed me to this position, I'm now in charge of an agency that nobody knows what to call it and nobody's quite sure what it does. And so hopefully this is the beginning of you having an understanding of what this unique agency does for the economy and the businesses and the communities in northeastern Minnesota. Just a little bit about myself on the front end. I was raised and still live in northeastern Minnesota in Chisholm, graduate of Chisholm High School. I went on to college at Hamline University, where I majored in political science and theater arts, which seems like an odd background, but then my next step was actually to come work at the Capitol. I actually was the committee legislative assistant to this very committee in the Senate. That was my first job out of college. And I moved home and ran for office, and I served 10-plus years in the House of Representatives, the past four as majority leader for District 5B. I'm a hybrid, though, in my background, just like this agency is, between business and state government. In my other life, in my other career, I do the books for a small business up in Chisholm, a small family business for the better part of the last decade. And so that is my background in both business and politics. And I've met a few of you briefly this morning. Look forward to introducing myself personally to the others. I will give you all my contact information, my email, my cell phone number, and please communicate with me at any time if you have any questions about the agency or what we do. The IRRB, the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board, is a very unique agency. It's actually 70 years old, and it was established 70 years ago this year in 1941 by the legislature and Governor Harold Stassen. This agency's mission is to diversify northeastern Minnesota's economy. The way that this agency is funded, it gets zero general fund tax dollars. It is funded purely on production taxes paid by the mining industry. The mining industry does not pay property taxes. They pay a production tax in lieu of property taxes. And that money is collected by the state and then distributed in a region. And the way it is distributed is, because they don't pay production taxes, a portion of that, or of property taxes, a portion of these production taxes go to the school districts, the cities, and the counties, like property taxes would. And then the last bit of that money is set aside to the IRRRB, this economic development agency. And the rationale that Governor Stassen and the legislature had at the time of establishing this agency was that when you're mining a non-renewable natural resource, it eventually is going to dry up. The mining will eventually go away. We will get all the product out of the ground. And they wanted to make sure that they were working since 1941 on making sure we could diversify the economy in northeastern Minnesota so that there would be livable wage jobs available for the people of northern Minnesota after mining went away. And so that was the rationale and the mission of the IRRRB. And it is a unique state agency as well. And this is where I think there's some misunderstanding. We are located up in Eveleth. I'm the only rural state commissioner, and my office is in Eveleth, Minnesota, right there on the Iron Range. So if you ever need me to come down, Mr. Chair, just give me a three-hour heads up, because it's that's the car ride time. But we are a state agency only because of the unique nature. The area that the IRRRB serves, the service area, is shown up here. It is multiple counties, Cook, Lake, St. Louis, Itasca, and Aiken County, and many communities, and about 17 to 20 school districts. And you can see the communities dotted along the map up there. Yes, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Sertich, I was going to ask if you had a map, because I do think the geography is important. And I also want to note to the members, you've got half of Mr. Sertich's presentation. You have the odd-numbered pages. So in the meantime, Mr. Sertich, we will try to grab the rest of the pages for members. But you might want to pay particular attention to the even-numbered pages, because we don't have those in front of us.
Okay.
But our crack staff is on the move.
Great.
Thank you, Mr. Sertich.
No problem, Mr. Chair and members. And so you see this is a very large geographic area where about 180,000 Minnesotans live. The rationale for the service areas, this is where mining has or is currently happening in these areas. From down in Aiken County, the Iron Range is actually three separate ranges. There's the Cuyuna Range, the Mesabi Range, and the Vermilion Range, or where the taconite is. And so that's where this region's borders are. And so the reason it's a state agency is because it's probably most efficient to collect the production taxes and then redistribute them back to the school districts, the cities, the townships, and the counties by doing it from the state. As you can imagine, if you did it county by county, that would be a duplication of services over these counties and the cities as well. So our agency is focused by state statute in three key areas. We do business development, we do community development, and we do workforce development. And we are right there in the state statutes. And it's very specific in these areas. I'd like to first focus on our business development. We work with many of our small businesses, manufacturing businesses, to look to see how we can help them. And this agency has a lot of flexibility within the state statutes on how we can help businesses. We can do low-interest loans, no-interest loans, grants. We can help with infrastructure to communities and EDAs to help our small businesses. A lot of our deals that we do are actually in conjunction with a business going out, trying to expand, grow jobs, grow their business. They'll go to a bank first and see how a bank can help participate, and a lot of times there's a gap in between. And then they'll come to our agency and see if we can help. And we can help with, like I said, low-interest loans and other ways, especially if they're creating jobs and jobs that pay good wages. And so this, for example, is one of our most recent success stories. This is Minnesota Twist Drill, and I like to really look at some of our success stories. This is Raiden Chisholm. The company's actually been around since the 1940s and was owned by local folks. It then was owned by some folks from outside the region, but then a local investor group bought back the business, and it had at the time probably around 70 to 90 employees. They had a unique opportunity last year to buy a business in Illinois that did some manufacturing, and they manufacture high-speed drill bits. And they had the opportunity to buy this company that was looking to sell, and either to sell to bring their manufacturing jobs offshore, out of the U.S., somewhere in the States, or in Minnesota. And they were able to partner with us on a loan and then a bank to make sure they could buy this company and actually move manufacturing jobs back into the state of Minnesota. And just last month, they hired their 90th new employee, so 90 new hires in the last year in manufacturing in Minnesota, because we were able to be the help. We weren't what solved the problem for them, but we were the gap financing that really made sure that they were able to buy this company and insource jobs into the state of Minnesota. 90 more manufacturing jobs in the state because of the public-private partnership that this agency provides. And the way these deals get done, and here's where it's also a unique agency, is there's a commissioner and a staff at this agency, a staff of about 55 workers. And then there's a board. And the board is a 13-member board, and it's made up of 5 members of the state Senate, appointed by the Senate Majority Leader, 5 members of the Minnesota House of Representatives, appointed by the Speaker, and then 3 citizen members, one each appointed by the Speaker, the Majority Leader in the Senate, and the Governor. So that's the 13-member board.
And Mr. Sertich, are you ready to make any requests?
Well, Mr. Chair, he's not here today, and maybe we can play on his sympathies of an injured hip, but Senator Tomasoni would be a great addition to the IRRRB board.
I understand, Mr. Sertich, he's expressed an interest, and for committee members, Senator Tomasoni is hopefully recovering and rehabbing as we speak. I don't know if he's going to make it to our meeting on Friday. I hope he does. On this point or on Senator Tomasoni's health, Senator Howe.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Commissioner, I'm not sure if I should call you Commissioner yet or not, but Commissioner Zertin, can you tell me, so I can have a little better understanding of this gap financing on this drill bit manufacturer, what percentage of the financing did you provide?
I can get you the exact details, but I know that we did a direct loan, and there were some grants to the city because this was in a business park in Chisholm, and right. So we did some infrastructure grants to the city to help as well. I'll get you those exact numbers because
just a general understanding of, you know, if it was 20%, 25%, or what the gap financing there was.
Yep. It was under 20%.
Fabulous. Thank you. Thank you, Mr.
Senator Howe has a question. Senator Howe.
No, Senator Daley.
I'm sorry. Senator Howe had his question. Senator Daley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sertich, thanks for taking time out to do this presentation. And I want to stay at a high level, not get into the details, but
Sure. Roughly
how much capital is allocated to make this kind of bank loan?
Sure. This current bank loan, it was definitely under $1 million.
Not for this one in particular, but
just in general.
In general, how much capital do you have to allocate to these kinds of projects?
I will be getting to that slide very shortly. So,
So, Mr. Sertich, if you could just pay some special attention then on when you get to that slide, and Senator Daley, I'll just note: is it 10 days on the job for you?
10 days on the job, sir. Yes.
So. You might get some more specific questions that you'll need to follow up with, but please do that and continue here.
Yep, and to Senator Howe, I will get you the exact details of all questions asked today. And so I just wanted to start with some of the successes, and then I'm actually going to dive right into the details of our budget. But I wanted to mention Minnesota Twist Drill. We have Cast Corporation, 15 new employees, another manufacturer on the Iron Range. Another one is North Shore Manufacturing up in Two Harbors. And so we like to work with manufacturing companies as well. You know, when you think of the Iron Range, you think about the 3 T's, taconite, timber, and tourism. But a lot of the good-paying jobs are in manufacturing and the service sector as well. And one of our most recent ones is DMR, which works with Daimler, a Fortune 500 company, added 87 employees also in manufacturing. Our second area of interest when I talked about business development is community development. We make sure that there are funds available to allocate to local cities and townships and others to make sure that they can attract businesses as well. As I said, mining companies don't pay property taxes, and so we play a role in making sure that communities have the tax base and the resources to develop their business parks. Here's one of the business parks here, Rock Ridge Business Park in Mountain Iron, which just had an expansion. They do have a Holiday Inn now, which if you were staying on the range, which would be a good place to stay Thursday night. We have many good hotels. Here's one of them. And you probably will have all the answers to your questions on Friday if you stayed in a Holiday Inn the night before. not our money, but this was a $9 million investment by the Holiday Inn in this business park with a planned $2 million conference center expansion that is in the works. Lake Country Power is also in this industrial park. And they have over 50 employees, and they have a new Perkins restaurant in this business park. We helped with the infrastructure to start this business park for the city of Mountain Iron. When a business is trying to locate anywhere, they look at the workforce. They also look at what health care is available in the community, and we actually help with the with some infrastructure for the city of Hibbing. This is the Hibbing, the hospital in Hibbing, Fairview Hospital, and you'll be driving right by it as it's located a little bit down the road from the community college, which you'll be at Friday. We helped with the sewer and water and making sure they could expand, and they're a level 3 trauma center now, which was actually a very important designation and helped somewhat with our getting Esser Steel located and working in northeastern Minnesota, and I'll talk about the Esser Steel project a little later. We help with housing as well. The housing stock in northeastern Minnesota is very old, and so we've helped communities such as this one in Mountain Iron make sure they have new housing stock for new workers and residents of the Iron Range. And this is another good partnership we've done with Silver Bay and an assisted living facility. We've had some issues with some of our assisted living facilities where residents of northeastern Minnesota had to move far away to Duluth and other areas. And that's really a stress on families when mom and dad or grandma and grandpa are living 60 to 90 miles away, and we're able to help Silver Bay construct an assisted living facility. It is 25 new jobs. It is a $2.7 million investment in Little Silver Bay, Minnesota, and for the public policy side, it brings grandma and grandpa closer to their families. The third piece is workforce development. Right there in the statute. We help everything from, we have some great innovation that I don't have time to get into right now, but would love to tell you about in subsequent visits, where there are some interesting opportunities that we're doing, an applied learning initiative. We're actually working with our high schools, working with our community colleges jointly and across boundaries, and working with businesses to make sure that students, what we used to call vocational education or tech education, they're able to actually get into our local manufacturing businesses as high school students and see future career opportunities. And so we're partnering with 17 of our school districts, partnering with all of our community colleges in northeastern Minnesota and our small businesses to give them those opportunities. In northeastern Minnesota, north of Duluth, there are no four-year colleges. We have many two-year colleges as well, but we have started doing this Iron Range Engineering, where we partnered up with Mankato State and other higher learning institutions to make sure that our students and our residents in northeastern Minnesota could get four-year educations and beyond right on the Iron Range. And we're focusing on engineering both at Itasca Community College and Mesabi Ranch Community College because so much of the new jobs, whether it be in mining or timber, deal with engineering, and you need those higher degrees. And so we've been partnering with those industries and those community and technical colleges to make sure that they have those engineering opportunities in northern Minnesota. And the beauty is they can go to school on the Iron Range, but they can also then work while they're in school at the mines to get that applied learning actually on the job, which is very important. And I think you'll talk more about this on Friday, but there's so much large-scale development that is in process, and this is hard to read, but if you just look, every box up there, which has words on it in this basically 90 miles of the core Iron Range, every box that you see up there is some large-scale development. Everything from the far left is Esser Steel, which is actually going to be constructing first a taconite facility and then doing the value add of actually doing steel production on the Iron Range for the first time, all the way through Keewatin Taconite, which is an existing mine which is looking to expand and is in the process of that, all the way to the top, which is where the non-ferrous proposed mines are, and there are multiple mines, Polymet and also Twin Metals, which is Franconia was merged with Twin Metals. recently. So you see all of those boxes. Those are just all the large projects. We as an agency have been involved along with DEED in doing some grants and loans to some of these large-scale projects. But primarily, if you have questions on permitting or others, that is not my area of expertise. That would be more questions for the DNR and the PCA. But we're actively involved in encouraging and trying to make sure these projects come to fruition. And I can have a very detailed printout of this for you all if you want to see what all is going on in the large development projects. Some of these large projects that have come forward, my first day when I was sworn in the legislature back in 2001 was the day that the LTV mine in the Aurora Lakes area announced that they were going to shut down immediately, and that was 1,400 jobs that were lost. At that point, we were looking at a way to utilize existing area there and see if we can do some value add to mining once the economy turned around in mining. And this was a partnership with the state of Minnesota. And as you see, and Senator Howe, an important piece of this is the leverage. And I think when you look at the percentages of what we put into projects versus what the private is, the leverage is a key piece for us. And this is a great example of that. We mine taconite. We made taconite pellets, and we shipped them out east, and that's where they made steel, and that's where the value add happened, and that's where a lot of great jobs were. But we're able to do a more value-added project here with Mesaba Nugget and Royal Heights Lakes, and they went online about a year ago this month. It was a $300 million investment. $42.5 million came from the state. 24.5 of it was from our agency, and $18 million from DEED. There's a 21st Century Minerals Fund that's established within DEED, and we have a matching fund at our agency. And that was given to this project to help it move forward. 100 permanent jobs, 500 construction jobs, doing value-added mining. I think this technology, it takes less oxygen, and it's more efficient way of making sure the pellets are available for out east. Another interesting project that we joined into is magnetation, and this is in Keewatin. They have found new processes over the course of the past few generations in extracting more of the minerals out of the ore. So they can go into the tailings basins and the overburden and extract minerals out of it that they could not extract a generation or two ago. And Magnetation is a company that goes into old mining areas and can extract more minerals out. And they started in 2009, and it's a $5.5 million company right now and growing. 56 permanent jobs, 15 construction jobs, and they just started a partnership with Cargill because I think they're going to bring this all over the world now and look at old mining areas and be able to extract more minerals out of areas that have long since been mined with old technology. So a great venture working with one of our Minnesota companies, Cargill, and a company that was started right up on the Iron Range, and we played a partnership in. Esser Steel is another one, and this is a company from India. Located in Nashwauk, this would be the first time we wouldn't be sending our pellets out east to do the value add. We would actually have a steel mill in Minnesota. It's been a long process. It goes back to legislators when I was a kid. They always wanted to make sure we made steel in Minnesota. And this is a $1.65 billion project that they're still in the process of getting their financing for. We played a role in a rail line and an infrastructure into this. The state of Minnesota between DEED and the IRRRB is $70 million for a $1.65 billion investment. It will be 500 permanent jobs and 2,000 construction jobs. I was on the site of Esser this cold fall when they were pouring the footings to start their work, and hopefully by next spring we're going to see a lot of other construction workers, 2,000 of them eventually, having jobs constructing this new facility in Nashwauk. But now I want to get to the guts of this agency. We're funded by the production tax. And so, as I said, we're a unique agency. We are really at the whim of how many tons of taconite are produced every year, because that is how we are funded. We are paid, though, in taxable tons on a three-year average, and that helps with the peaks and the valleys, because you can see on this graph, mining production has been fairly level for the past few years, but we took a significant dip last year. There was a time back in 2009 when every single mine was shut down at the same time, and some of them were out for over a year because there was not a demand for steel worldwide. That demand has picked up now, and all mines are running again at very high levels, but the production back in 2009 was only 17 million tons, whereas you see in years past, it was getting close to 40 million tons. And so that's going to affect our agency's budget over the next 3 years because of three-year averaging. Thankfully, we won't go down to a budget that is basically cut in half in 1 year because production is back up again this year, and we'll be getting those figures right around the first week in February. And that's where, when you get your budget book eventually, and it has our state agency in it, we're actually an agency that budgets annually and not biannually. So it's going to be different. When I'm before the committee, I'll be bringing you a different sort of budget because the way the budgeting process in the state goes is the state agencies start in November and even earlier getting their budget put together, and the governor puts his overall budget on your table on February 15th. Well, we don't have our data of production taxes until February 1st, and we have an annual budget, so we'll probably be having a little different conversation on our agency's budget. And then we don't vote on it, on our agency budget, until we have our board in place. So this is my plug right now, assistant leader and chair, that as soon as we get our IRRB board appointed, then we can start talking about our agency budget. And we actually generally put that agency budget and vote on it as an IRRB board in June. But we will be bringing that data to this board. We can talk about our previous budget right now.
Well, Mr. Sertich,
yes, sir.
Are we going to have our budget first, or are you going to have your budget first? That would be a good little bet. You're trying to do a budget by June.
Well, I hope for the good of the state they're both done by June. Right. Yeah. The taconite tax, here's how it's distributed to the agency. The first money goes to the schools and the cities and the counties, and then what's left over from taconite taxes comes to the agency, and it's designated within state statute where it goes. And there are accounts within this board that are directed by state statute where this money goes and how we can spend it, either on development or operations. And then we have a trust fund, which I'll talk about in a minute. And then if you look at the lower right on this slide, which I don't know is an odd or an even slide in your packet, is this an odd one?
We've got all the packet now.
Oh, great. Okay.
Good.
All right. So you have this in front of you as well. Some of it is directed specifically to revenue bonds for our school facilities. As I said, mining companies don't pay property taxes. So there were health and safety revenue bonds that were let for our school districts. And some of that money, as you see, per statute for the next 15 years goes to that. The other to this Iron Range Higher Education account, which has been working on these new engineering programs and this partnership between our high schools and our colleges and our businesses that I spoke of earlier. And then the TEDF, the Taconite Economic Development Fund, which actually we rebate money back to the taconite mines on a yearly basis as well for projects that help either their workforce or their environmental issues. As you know, with new standards with air and water, the mining companies are under more strict provisions year after year, and we rebate some of their money back to them to make sure that they're addressing those environmental or workforce issues. Here's our revenue of our state agency. We try to carry a reasonable but healthy carry forward, especially because of how we are funded. With production taxes, we want to make sure that we have a healthy carry forward. Primarily, we're funded with production taxes. We have investment earnings on our Douglas J. Johnson Trust Fund, and that is part of this money goes into the corpus of a trust fund, and we live somewhat off of those investment earnings. We can spend some of that corpus on economic development, but it takes a supermajority of the IRRB board to do that, and we've done that from time to time. We make a lot of loans to those small businesses that I spoke of, and so that loan revenue is there. And then facilities revenues, and I'll talk about the facilities that the IRRB both owns and in some instances operates. And then there's an occupation tax for Region 3, which is the taconite tax relief area used to be a little bigger and include Kuching and Carlton County, and that's just a pass-through of our state agency, and we don't deal with that funding directly. Here are our expenses. Operations, which I'll get into more particular on the next slide. Programs, which are what we develop for more community development areas. And then our projects, which is the capital, I believe, that one of the questions were about. And I'll get to that in a second here. First, operations. We operate the Giants Ridge Golf and Ski Resort, which has two premier golf courses and a ski hill, both for downhill skiing. They do some tubing and snowboarding there, and some of the best cross-country skiing in the state and, I think, in the country. And we actually own and operate that facility. We contract out some of the services there, the golf and otherwise. And actually, there's a lot of private investment at Giants Ridge as well in housing and development. And so that's a major part of our operations because that's quite a major facility over the years. We also own the Iron World Minnesota Discovery Center, which is located in Chisholm, and this is the best way probably to describe it, it's what the Minnesota Historical Society does on a state level, we do in the region. We house all the historical documents. If you, and I know many of you have connections and family members who are from the Iron Range, you can go up there and look at when they came over on what ship and their whole background. But we also preserve the history of both the taconite industry and the timber industry and all the immigrant communities that located a century ago up on the Iron Range. And so we own that operation, but it's actually run now by a nonprofit organization of local community leaders who I think can be more responsive and have better opportunities to get different resources, outside private resources into that facility that a state agency really can't access. But we still do own the property and do fund that.
And Mr. Sertich, I have Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have some broader questions that may be at the end of your presentation, but one of them I think is relevant right to this slide, and I'm just wondering if you can clarify for me, Commissioner Sertich. So the operations of $15.9 million mm-hmm. is to keep these three entities operating. Is that right?
Senator, that is correct.
Okay. That's all I need to know. So they're ongoing expenses for operating these three entities. Thank you.
Senator, yes. Yep.
Mr. Sertich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And then the Eveleth office is our office, the agency office that does the business deals, worked with the community development and the tourism. And here are the agency facilities we have. We do mineland reclamation. We work with the mining companies both when they mine, and you'll see that up there. You'll see these almost small mountains called overburden of red ore up there, and we try to find ways to reclaim old mining areas to make them usable again. And so a portion of our facility does this mineland reclamation, works a lot with the DNR, the mining industries, and the timber industries. We've actually have a growth chamber in this facility as well to help grow new timber products too. As I talked about Giants Ridge with the skiing portion of it and also the golf piece of it as well, beautiful, beautiful golf courses. If you like to golf, I'd encourage you to make a loop of northern Minnesota. Actually, if you add in Fortune Bay's Wilderness Golf Course too, you can get to three top-notch golf courses all within a short period of time. And then the slide on the lower left hand is probably my favorite view in northeastern Minnesota, and it's right down outside my hometown of Chisholm, and this is where Iron World is located. And as you see those, that is what I'm talking about when you look at overburden. That's the red ore. Those are old mine pits from back in the early 1900s, which have now filled up with water and in some cases fish. And we need to take more opportunity. You know the joke where, you know, the best investment is land because they're not making any more of it? Well, actually, in northeastern Minnesota, when you look at these old mine pits and when they fill up with this water, which is crystal clear and beautiful water, we could actually have some new opportunities down the road here to make new lakeshore in the state of Minnesota in some of these overburdened areas. Here's our employee complement trend. We have tried to run a more lean and efficient agency. Back in 2004, we had over 80 employees, and we're now down to about 55 or 56 full-time employees, and that includes both our agency staff and our employees that work at Giants Ridge and the Mineland Reclamation Area. All of our employees, though, are located in northeastern Minnesota. And now here we talk about the capital. That was a question, and our projects. This last year, we had $9.5 million that was budgeted for these business developments, and that would be everything from the twist drill project that I talked about to some other business development ventures. $4 million went to public works projects, and that's the infrastructure that I spoke of before. And this could be anything from communities' sewer and water upgrades to their streets to the infrastructure to the business parks to help with the expansions of the hospital or other businesses. And then we had $1.5 million of a wage subsidy program, which is something that they did back in the 1980s, where they worked with businesses to say, if you hire a new employee, we will take a portion of that salary and pay for a portion of that salary. We helped over 120 businesses in northeastern Minnesota hire over 300 people, and this was kind of a kickstart to make sure that they would grow and expand their jobs. It was a MEED program that was in the 1980s in the old Department of Economic Development that we we replicated just for northeastern Minnesota.
And Mr. Surge, on the wage subsidy, so is the money you have allocated now, is that for old agreements, or is that kind of a seed pool for potential new wage subsidy kind of agreements on the Iron Range?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this $1.5 million was from last year, and I have to consult with the new board when it's appointed, but it was such a successful program. I potentially would like to see if businesses would be interested in doing this again. 124 businesses took advantage of this program. I just got my data in front of me. 56 new employees in the medical industry, 19 in dental. Many of these are small businesses, 14 of them sole proprietors. Most of these businesses have anywhere from 6 to 25 employees, but it was a way of them expanding their small businesses. And this is a philosophy that I want to encourage and expand at this agency, and I talked to a few of the senators who I met with this morning about this as well. So often in economic development, we try to look across our borders to other states or other regions and say, well, if we just throw some money and incentives at this business from another state, maybe we can encourage them to come to Minnesota. When we have so many existing small businesses in our communities, we don't have to convince to come here because they are here already. And in northern Minnesota, you come there because you like to hunt fish and do the outdoors and live in rural Minnesota in small towns. Well, we have a lot of small business people already who, if we can help them maybe grow have 50 businesses grow 5 jobs in northern Minnesota right now, that's better than going to, say, Alabama and trying to attract one business to bring 100 jobs. So a real mission and value of mine and the Dayton administration is to work with existing small businesses and ask them, what do you need and how can we help? How can we be that gap for you? What do you need filled to grow 5 jobs, 10 jobs at a time?
Senator Howe.
Mr. Chairman, I just have a question. I'm looking at the numbers here. I'm just trying to, I know we want to stay at a high-level overview here, but yep. When you look at the taconite tax distribution, it's just about $28 million. And then when I look at the revenue, it's about $20 million. Where does the other $7 million come from for the tax distribution?
That, Mr. Chair and Senator Howe, that goes into the corpus of the DJJ, the Doug Johnson Fund, and that's set aside, so we live off the interest of that. That's our seed that we set aside, that $7 million.
But my question is you've got distribution of $27.7 million,
right.
And you only have revenues of $20
million. Yes. Mr. Chair and Senator Howe, if you go back to slide 13 that has the the box chart there,
mm-hmm.
You can see at the top is the $27 million that you spoke of. If you go down the left side, you see okay. The operations of the 20, and that's the board account and the TEPF, the Taconite Environmental Protection Fund, are two different ways that we spend the money in economic development. But if you go down the other side, that's where, okay. Within statute, it's directed both to that trust fund and then to those paying off the education bonds, the education account, and then rebated back to the mining companies. And that's all within state statute. So that, if you look down the right side, that's where the other $7 million goes in the budget.
Well, I see where it goes, but Mr. Chairman, I see where it goes, but it looks like you're starting with a production tax for fiscal year 2011 of $27 million. But when you go down and look at your projected revenues on the production tax, it's $20
million. Which page?
So if you look at on page 7.
7, okay. Yep.
You're looking at fiscal year 2011, total production tax, $27 million. And, I'm seeing the breakout on that, how yep. It flows down.
Sure.
My question is, how does it flow up when you're starting with a taconite production tax of $20 million?
Mr. Chair and Senator House, if I understand your question correctly, we won't know what we're going to start with next year until the first week of February, because there's a 3-year averaging
okay.
on the money we get. And so we have yet to be told what last year's actual production in tonnage is.
Right.
And so when we know that, then we'll be able to average the past 3 years to know how much money we'll be starting with next year. Does that make sense? For now.
A little bit. I know we're meeting afterwards. Yeah. We'll dig into it a little further. Thank
we'll
you.
Dig a little deeper. Yep.
Good.
Thank you. One area that we've gotten into more is renewable energy. When you look at some of the, you know, mining in particular, and even timber, is very energy intensive processes, and you can't even imagine what they're if you think your energy bill goes up in the winter for your house or your business, you got to talk to the mining industry and see what their energy bill is for Minnesota Power. But we've tried to move into the area of renewable energy in a few different ways. We have some public utilities up in particular Hibbing in Virginia, and you see on these slides here, that used to use coal, a lot of coal. But we have a lot of timber up there, and we found a way to do some biomass and convert the public utilities to use biomass. Because when in the timber industry, they cut down the trees, they leave a lot of tops and a lot of limbs out in the woods just laying on the ground. And we've developed a way to make sure that these logging businesses could be even more productive and make a better living by collecting those tops and limbs, and then we chip them up and we burn them in our local facilities. Good for the environment, good for local small businesses, a great investment for these communities. And so we've entered in the area of renewable energy. Another area and another business we helped this past year is a new solar manufacturing facility that's going in Mountain Iron. And there's a solar rebate that Xcel Energy has. And the funny part is we're going to be actually manufacturing these solar panels up in the Iron Range, but the people who are going to benefit most from it are folks from down in the metropolitan area who are in Xcel Energy's service area. They have a rebate, and if you join in that rebate and use Minnesota produced solar panels, and there are a few other Minnesota companies doing solar panels, the payoff for these solar for using solar panels either on your homes or small businesses will be right around 5 years, which hopefully will make it beneficial. And so they'll be manufactured up on the Iron Range and used down in Xcel Energy's service area, and this is another few dozen good manufacturing jobs up in northeastern Minnesota. And another area we'd always look at growing is wind. We have on Taconite Ridge, depending on how you come up to the range, there are some windmills up near one of the mining companies that Minnesota Power is doing, but we'd like to manufacture windmills in Minnesota. We've actually worked in partnership with Duluth and have tried to reach out to some of the major windmill providers to do the blades, the turbines, you name it. I think we're uniquely positioned in northern Minnesota with being centrally located in the United States, but also having the rail and then the port in Duluth in manufacturing wind blades and turbines. And so that's an area we'd look to grow at, and we've been actively pursuing companies and interest in that area. But what we come down to is, I think, around the table, no matter what your partisan hat is jobs. And we've been very successful in the past with Delta Airlines and Blue Cross and Blue Shields, and from down to Ryan's Rustic Rails, which is right outside of Orr, which does some great woodwork for benches and railings and you name it. And then we also have Delta Dental up north as well. So we're not just Taconite and the natural resources up north. We have these good service jobs as well, adjudicators from Blue Cross and others. And so we're looking to diversify in every way that we can in northern Minnesota. So with that, I'm open to any other questions you have, and I thank you for the opportunity.
Okay, I've got a couple members. Hang on, Senator Daley and Senator Miller for sure. A couple from my end of the table, Mr. Sertich. Unemployment numbers. I don't know if you guys have anything that is broken down in that fashion, but this is a unique part of Minnesota. You are a unique agency, and we're looking forward to spending some time up there with you. But, you know, how can we as a state and how can you as an agency measure success? The last slide was jobs, jobs, jobs. Can you break out an unemployment figure for the Iron Range? What can you share with us on that today?
This has been an issue even when I was in the legislature, Mr. Chair, because generally unemployment rates are broken out by county. And being in St. Louis County, where you have Duluth on the southern end and you have the rest of the county, which is very rural, that can be can kind of change the numbers. And so we've worked very hard with our local chambers of commerce and others to get some very specific unemployment numbers for the Iron Range and specific north of Duluth. And what I can tell you is it's a percentage point higher than the state average right now. So we're sitting at probably around 8.2%. And that even changes depending on what area of the Iron Range you're in, because that's, you know, over 100-mile area as well. And so much of our unemployment rate is really dictated on the natural resource economy, on the mining industry. If Hibbing tax shuts down, the area around Hibbing is going to suffer worse. If another mine, you know, more on the eastern side of the range, MinTac shuts down, that'll impact that area more so. And then what happens, though, is the spinoff jobs in these industries, the vendors of these these taconite mines. And I have to tell you, knowing where you all live around this table, whether you're from Minneapolis or Winona or Rochester or you name it, there's probably an engineering firm or a vendor who actually works with the mining industry. It's a $3 billion industry to the state of Minnesota each year. And so you probably each have constituents who work with our mining industry. My favorite one is Viking Explosive down in Rosemount. They're the ones that handle the dynamite to actually do the blasting. And if you come back again, you got to come back on a Wednesday because that's when Hibbing-Tack blasts. And it's funny because we have tiny earthquakes on the Iron Range every Wednesday. And I always say when the ground shakes, I'm happy because that means people are working. And it was tough last year to not have the ground shake for an entire year because then I knew people were collecting unemployment checks instead of paychecks.
And one more from me, Mr. Surich. I promised to ask you about
Polymet.
Yes. See, when you're working closely with your vice chair and your ranking member, they just kind of spit it out. The Polymet proposal, the status of that project, we are all getting questions and emails on that, and I know that's an important file on your desk. So what would you share with us this morning on that?
Well, Polymet is the first of the non-ferrous mining operations that is moving forward. It's been in the environmental review process for the better part of 5 years. And I think, you know, as I said before, the permitting side of things are questions better left to the DNR and NPCA. And actually, I believe folks from Polymet will be at the hearing on Friday if you have particular questions for that project. The role that we play in that is to be advocates for economic development in northeastern Minnesota. And we also have been trying to help with some land exchanges between the U.S. Forest Service and Polymet, but that has come under a lawsuit most recently. Actually, my first day on the job, we got slapped with the lawsuit. So that was an interesting way to start my new venture in the executive branch. But our role is more of a secondary role. It's one to try to promote economic development in the region and to try to foster those relationships necessary between Polymet and the state, but then also with our local vendors as well.
Senator Daley.
I have two questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Going back to my original question about how much capital is allocated to gap financing, even after listening to this, I'm not certain what that amount is or where that money comes from. I see quite a few different numbers. There's $15 million in projects, $9.5 million for business development, but it's not very clear as to, you know, you got the Dean Johnson Fund,
yep.
$4 million there. How much is it and where does it come from?
Yep. Mr. Chair and Senator Daley, the best number, if you're actually talking about money to businesses, is last year's budget was $9.5 million that was budgeted. The other is more in the community development side of things, and that generally goes to the communities to do the infrastructure. So it was $9.5 million was budgeted.
So if I could take it one more step,
Senator
Mr.
Daley.
Chair. So there's $27 million annually that is raised through the production tax?
Mr. Chair, Senator Daley, that is correct.
And of that, $15 million goes to operations, $15.98 goes to operations to fund the administration, the golf course, and the Discovery Center, and an additional $15 million goes to that development fund?
Mr. Surtich.
Mr.
Then you got $4 million for public works and $1.5 for wage subsidy. That would give me over $30 million. So I'm not quite seeing how this ties together.
Sure. Mr. Chair and Senator, the budget fluctuates based on the production taxes, and so that's where the numbers get inconsistent. And we also have dipped into our carry forward in the past to fund economic development projects. And last year, actually, the numbers are going to look different because there were a few legislative initiatives that was independent of the production taxes that went into the renewable energies, which is going to bump those numbers. So the numbers won't truly add up because the legislators that were here last year actually went outside of the production taxes that come to the agency, but they took production taxes that were going to go to either the cities, the town, the counties, the schools, and they redirected some of that money back in. The other committee that is so important to this area is the tax committee. The funding formula for this is probably even more complicated than the school funding formula. But and so when you talk about taking 1 cent of production taxes and moving it somewhere, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so the tax committee at that time redirected some money into some economic development initiatives. So that's why the numbers look different from actually the $27 million coming in, and that's why you see a higher number of money that was budgeted actually for this economic development.
Senator Daley, just one follow-up.
So if I hadn't asked that question, that information wouldn't have been brought out. How do we know what the real numbers are? And I don't mean to be confrontational, but as we struggle to come up with a good budget, it's really important that we have all the information without having to ask extra times for it. I mean, these are relatively small dollars, you know, in a $30 billion situation, but it's really important that we have all that information.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Daley, I agree with you. I was asked today to give a broad overview, and so I'm willing to come back to this committee or especially spend time individually walking through this. I have stacks and stacks of information to give you in this area, and it's a very unique and complicated area, as I said at the outset. So I absolutely agree with you that you need to get all the information, and I'm happy to dive down into it.
And Mr. Surge, I'd encourage you to have that discussion with certainly with Senator Daley, but with other members. I have Senator Miller and then Senator Kelash. Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Sertich, for the meeting this morning and for the presentation. I'm just extremely curious why you guys are operating a golf course and ski resort and whose balance sheet that's on.
Sure. Mr. Chair and Senator Miller, this was a decision that was made decades ago. Much like many communities operate local golf courses and other facilities, it was decided that that this would be a venture that this agency would enter into decades ago and then utilize. And so it's right in our operations budget, but it is a public-private partnership. We contract out. You know, we're not experts in running a golf course or running the food and beverage service of it. So a lot of this is actually contracted out with private businesses. And so that money is also, when you see that operations, that also goes to the contracts for people who have expertise in those areas. There is, I believe, over $50 million of private investment in that complex, whether it be in housing or other recreational opportunities. We have joined up with a local bank and some outside private developers to develop that area. So it's not just a government-run facility. It's really a private public partnership. We just own the actual ski hill and the golf courses.
Okay. Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are there any revenues generated off that facility? And then whose asset is it? Is it the asset of the IRRB?
Mr. Chair and Senator Miller, it is the asset is a state asset. It is of the IRRRB. If you look back on a few slides back, the revenue from the facilities, and it's primarily the Giants Ridge facility, has been right under $5 million, and that comes back into the agency. And we try to make what we try to do is make sure that facility runs in the black, and it hasn't in years past. You know, when they built the first golf course, that was great, and they actually built the second golf course right before I got in the legislature. And actually, I've sat on the IRRRB board for the past 10 years as an elected representative from up there. But the year before I got there, they decided to build a second golf course. And that's when golf was at its peak and everybody was golfing and everybody would be golfing in the future. And then it's kind of dipped down to more normal standards. And so we're trying to make sure that we run that facility in a good way. But they may have overdeveloped golf courses up there with two. But they're two great golf courses.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Kelash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sertich, one of the things you didn't mention is how much you're leveraging with these business development, and I'm not sure if you can do that with Public Works or the wage subsidies, but it seems that that would be a number that would be useful. So for your $9.5 million for business development, how much private sector dollars went into the development there as well, if you have that number?
Yes, sir. And I'll get you an exact number, but I believe over the course of the last 4 years, when I was looking back in my 10 days here and getting data, over the course of the last 4 or 5 years, the leverage was actually 4 to 1, 4 private dollars for every dollar of investment that we made in these budget areas. So it's been anywhere, like I said, average over the last four years, or 5 years has been 4-1. In the last year or two, it's been more around 2-1, and I think that has to do with the downturn in the economy.
Okay, thank you.
I've got Senator Nelson, and then I want to wind this up, and we'll see more of Mr. Surge on Friday.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Surtich, tell me, thank you, one, for the in-depth the overall view. I've never really known what all was in that IRRB, and it's pretty broad. I mean, I see school facilities, infrastructure, recreation facilities, economic development. So it's very broad, and I just am wondering, how many people does this serve? What jurisdiction are we talking about here, and how many people are involved in participate in these things?
Sure. Mr. Chair and Senator Nelson, you saw the area map up there. We have about 55 employees. We serve that Taconite tax relief area. There are 180,000 Minnesotans that live in our area, but we serve the entire state. If you come up to Recreate and you go to one of our parks up there, if you come up to Ski Giants Ridge, it's an asset that is there for the entire state. But there's 180,000 people who actually live in the area that's prescribed.
Okay, and then my last question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there I'm sure you have like an annual report that lists all of your expenses and projects and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we might be able to get that.
Mr. Surtich.
Mr. Chair and members, we actually, as per law, are instructed to give a biannual report. I took as many copies as I could scrounge up on my desk before I came down here, so I have 5 or 6, but I'll make sure everybody has a copy of our biannual report.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Howard, are you approaching the mic?
Mr. Chair, I was just going to say I'm just looking forward to the commissioner's vision for this agency in the future, and thank you for being here today.
My pleasure.
Senator Metzen.
Yeah, just to follow up on Senator Howe, for a person that's been on the job for 10 days, this was an excellent presentation. So I commend you for the in-depth knowledge that you're giving this committee. So for a 10-day on-the-job training period, you did a pretty good job.
Thanks.
Mr. Surtich, I have Senator Cohen, and then again, members, we're going to shift gears.
Mr. Chairman, just very quickly, having a chance to congratulate Commissioner Surtich on the appointment, and I obviously got here late because I had another meeting. Looking at the biography, note that you're missing a couple of things. One, that you're a former Senate employee.
I did mention that, Mr. Chair, earlier, yes.
But I'll bet you didn't mention your movie career.
No, I did not, Mr. Chair.
Senator Cohen, do you want to fill in the blanks?
Well, Commissioner Surtich, I can't say, had a lead role in North Country, but how did you identify yourself in North Country?
Mr. Chair, members, the movie North Country was filmed in northeastern Minnesota, and I was an extra in the movie, but I referred to myself as Leering Steelworker Number 2. That was the role I played in that.
Well, thank you, Mr. Surtich. And members, again, for purposes of our meeting, our joint committee meeting on Friday, Mr. Surtich and his folks have been very helpful. We put together a pretty in-depth agenda, which includes, I think it includes Sammy's Pizza,
mm-hmm.
A tour at Hibbing TAC,
yep.
And then a couple hours at Hibbing Community College, hearing from folks up there. So thank you, Mr. Surtich, for your help in putting that together. We look forward to spending a little time in this special part of Minnesota. And thank you again for starting your rounds and meeting with members of this committee. We look forward to working with you.
My pleasure. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and committee members.
So, members, shift of gears here. There are some let me do this. Let me ask Ms. Larson and Mr. Hesse to go to the witness table as Mr. Surtich is unplugging. There's a few, there's actually 4 different articles in your packet that struck me and staff. These are all within the last 3 days, as again, further reason why we are spending a lot of time in this committee on kind of the macroeconomic situation in Minnesota and asking ourselves, what can we do to help job creators? And I'm just going to, for those who don't have a copy of this or for those watching this or listening to this hearing, a headline from last Friday, Minnesota loses 22,000 jobs in December. Minnesota jobless rate, well, it actually went down a little bit, so we're at about 7%. State's venture capital investment dives to a new low. And then finally, there was an article in the Star Tribune about the corporate or business income tax and the proposals. There are now multiple proposals now in the legislature, some to cut it, and this particular columnist suggests that we abolish it. So these issues are all front and center for us, and the articles are timely. And what I hope to continue again is the conversation in this committee about how we can lower the cost of doing business in Minnesota, make this a more attractive place for those who are already here to expand and to take a risk. And so we've had some testimony over the last couple weeks from perhaps individual members of the organizations at the other end of the table today, but I don't think we've heard from either of Ms. Larson or Mr. Hesse just yet. So my sense is that I should start with Ms. Larson. Why don't you introduce yourself and welcome to the committee. And let me just preface it. I will expect members to have questions, but if you can start off with just a general introduction of your the organization you represent, and I just always like to hear what are your members telling you? How's the economy for them? What's their general confidence level? And then most importantly, what can we do? What is it that we can do here at the state capitol? So start with Ms. Larson. Thanks for coming to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Jill Larson. I'm here representing the Minnesota Business Partnership. For those of you who aren't familiar with the partnership, our membership is made up of about 100 or so CEOs of essentially Minnesota's largest employers. And so our members have a unique global perspective. Many, if not all of them, are doing business in the global marketplace, but they have a focus on Minnesota. Our members employ about 2 million people worldwide, but about 400,000 Minnesotans. So I think we bring kind of a unique perspective in terms of the business climate and the fierce competition that we're facing around the globe. When Doug Baker, the CEO of Ecolab, was here a couple of weeks ago, he talked about the strengths that Minnesota has. And we do have a lot of strengths. We have a high-quality workforce, high workforce participation rate, well-educated population. We have a diverse economy that has actually helped us weather some past recessions. And we have a high quality of life. Those qualities, I think, sometimes we tend to take for granted, and we kind of rest on our laurels and think that those things are going to keep us successful and guarantee our success in the future. And I think what our members are telling us is that global competition is real, it is growing, it is fierce, and that we can't rest on our laurels. We do have a lot of headquartered companies here, but a lot of them were started here a long time ago. Some of it was based on geography. We don't see a lot of those companies making major expansions here. Again, as Doug Baker mentioned when he was here earlier, we were losing some small and mid-sized businesses. And so geography just isn't what it used to be. We are competing in a world market, and the emerging markets are across the world. And that can be a good thing for our members. We should want our Minnesota businesses to compete in those global markets and to succeed in those global markets, because that actually can help create and retain and grow jobs here in Minnesota. So we should be encouraging that. As you all know, the world's a very different place than it was 15 or 20 years ago. Capital, people, jobs are much more mobile than they were. So we can't look back at the tax climate in the 1990s and say, well, Minnesota did just great back then when we were a high tax state, so you know, we should be doing just fine now. I think we know that with the changes in technology and the emerging markets, it's a very different world than it was back then. It's a much, much more competitive place. And so many other states and countries have such a keen focus on attracting businesses. You look across the other states that are all number one focus, jobs. And so we are in a race. With respect to the tax issue, taxes do matter. We talk about taxes up here because our members tell us they matter. Are they the only factor that companies take into consideration when they're making expansion decisions or relocation decisions? No. But they're important. A lot of companies use site selectors when they're looking to expand or relocate. And I think the two biggest factors site selectors look at is human capital, workforce, and cost of doing business. And cost of doing business is a big factor. Minnesota does very well when it comes to the human capital equation. But I think we also need to understand that other states and other countries also have talented workforces. They're catching up with us, and in some cases, they're surpassing us. And so the cost of doing business becomes more and more important. We do have a very high corporate tax rate. And depending on how you figure it, it's the third or fourth highest, essentially, in the industrialized world. When you combine the federal rate with the statutory rate, that gets us about the third highest. And our members do look at the combined rate because they're competing with companies that are doing business all over the world. And so that matters. The Tax Foundation ranks us 43rd out of 50th in terms of business tax climate. In addition to the tax issue, we have high labor costs here. And that can be a good thing because people have higher wages to spend, but it is another consideration that businesses look at when they are making location decisions. And we don't do a lot of direct incentives in Minnesota. Now, I think from the partnership perspective, we'd probably rather create a better climate overall than focus on individual incentives. But we have to be aware that other states are giving incentives, and so that's another issue of competition that we need to factor in. I think Doug Baker said it really well. He was interviewed last week, and he said, you know, it's less about Minnesota kind of falling down and more about other states and other countries becoming much more competitive and sort of catching up. And so that means that the cost of doing business here in Minnesota becomes a bigger issue. And we're a small state competing in a really big world. So the bottom line is anything that we do here in Minnesota that makes it more expensive to do business makes it less of incentive for our companies to grow here or to even stay here. I think we talk a lot about growing jobs, and that's obviously very important. We also need to be thinking about retaining the jobs that we have. With respect to the corporate tax issue in the bill, and I don't want to get too much into tax policy because this isn't the tax committee, but the corporate tax is just a bad tax. I mean, it essentially violates every tax policy principle on its face. It's anti-competitive. The Tax Reform Commission report that came out in 2009 essentially, quote, "The corporate tax represents the largest anti-competitive gap for any tax between Minnesota and overseas competitors." There are tons of studies that show that it has a negative impact on growth. It's got a negative impact on wages. The international trend is actually toward lower corporate taxes. And studies have shown that even if you lower the rate, in countries where the rate's been lowered, it actually increases revenues. And so while I know that there's a revenue note on it that shows that there's a loss of money to the state, I think you can make a good argument that it will actually bring in more revenues into the state. It's also a very, very regressive tax. It's passed on to workers in the form of lower wages. It's passed on to consumers in the form of higher prices. I think a lot of people think that it's just a tax that, you know, CEOs pay. It's not. Your constituents pay it. And the Department of Revenue has done a study that showed that any reduction in the corporate tax, the majority of it gets passed on to Minnesota workers in the form of higher wages and to Minnesota consumers. So the benefit of a reduction stays mostly in Minnesota. And it's a really costly tax to administer. for the relatively small amount of money that it brings into the state, it costs the state and the companies that it's applied to a lot of money. I've seen studies that it costs as much as 8% of the revenues that it brings into the state for the Department of Revenue to administer the tax. And it's a very volatile and unstable tax, and so it exacerbates the bad budget situation we have in Minnesota. From 2002 to 2007, we saw 121% increase in corporate tax receipts. Then from 2007 to 2010, it dropped 43%. So we see this roller coaster, and it really makes it harder for you as lawmakers to budget. It's four times more volatile than the income tax and six times more volatile than the sales tax. So it's just it's a very flawed tax. And last but probably not least, it's a hidden tax. I mean, people think that they're not paying it, but they are. Every good that people purchase has the corporate tax hidden in it. With respect to the statewide business property tax, it's also addressed in Senate File 1. I think you heard a lot from the NIAP folks. I won't go into a lot of details. But business property does pay nearly three times the effective tax rate as residential property. You hear a lot of complaints, I know, from your homeowners about property taxes. But business property taxes, we only represent about 13% of the total market share, but they pay 31% of all the property taxes. So there is a real disparity. And we have made some progress in terms of property tax reform and relief for businesses. You know, back in 1995, we had the highest commercial industrial property tax rate in the country. And through some of the reforms that were passed bipartisanly in this legislature, we've made progress. But we're still, I think we're ranked about ninth now. And so it's still a factor. And the statewide property tax, that's one issue that the legislature can actually address. So in closing, I'd like to say we appreciate Senate File 1. We appreciate you bringing it forward, offering up some ideas to reduce the cost of doing business. Despite the budget challenges that you're faced with, we hope that you take into account that as we come out of this recession and businesses are looking to where they want to grow, where they want to expand, this kind of a bill can send the message that this is a good place to grow those jobs. Other states and other countries are proposing cuts in their business taxes as we speak. And so, as I mentioned before, there's some fierce competition out there. I don't think we're ever going to be the lowest tax state, and that's not what we're asking for. I think we're saying if we can kind of moderate it, and that combined with the great strengths that we have here already, we can make this a really attractive place to do business. So, Mr. Chairman and members, I appreciate the time, appreciate the bill, and be happy to answer questions.
Well, thank you, Ms. Larson. I'd like to have Mr. Hesse get some of his remarks into the record and onto the table here before us, and then we can finish up with some discussion. So I appreciate that perspective. Mr. Hesse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the record, my name is Tom Hesse. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Minnesota Chamber has around 2,300, 2,400 business members across the state. We have, I think, most of the members of the partnership within our membership. But when you look at our membership, I think we're at least on a size basis, much more diverse. 75-80% of our members have 100 employees or fewer. So we represent a lot of small companies around the state. And about 55% of our membership is within the metropolitan area, 45% in greater Minnesota. So that gives you a little picture of who our membership is and where they're located. You know, I think that the first meeting of this committee, you heard from Bill Blazer and David Olson about the Chamber's Grow Minnesota program. And I won't go through all of the details that they provided, but they did identify some issues for you that do make it difficult to do business here in Minnesota. They highlighted, I think, the tax climate, environmental permitting, certainly that's addressed in this bill, energy issues that we have to be watchful of, healthcare reform. They're concerned about the cost of health care to their members and their employees. And then in the long run, education, making sure we have an educated workforce so that they can be as competitive as possible. So, as I said, two of the issues that they highlighted at that first meeting are included and in Senate File 1, the environmental review and permitting reform, and addressing, at least beginning to address, the state's tax burden. Both are important. Permitting is, I think, is critical. As we heard from Commissioner Sertich, there's certainly some issues on the Iron Range that need to be addressed, and you'll hear more about that on Friday with the permitting issues there. But it goes all over the state. So we're hopeful that we can make some progress on reform of the environmental review and permitting system this year. On the tax side, it's also important to address the overall tax burden of Minnesota companies. And I think Ms. Larson said it right, that making some progress, even if it's small this year, sends a good signal to Minnesota employers that we're going to be moving in the right direction. I'll shorten my comments just by saying I agree with, I think, everything Jill mentioned on the corporate income tax. Maybe I'll just touch a little bit more on the state property tax. You also heard a lot about this from the NAOP folks last week. But we have made some progress in Minnesota over the years reducing employer property tax burdens. In the early 1990s, Minnesota businesses faced a 6% effective tax rate, your property tax paid divided by the market value of your property. That was, as Jill said, the highest in the country. And, we have come down from that level, but we're still, hovering around the top 10 nationally for commercial property, a little bit lower for industrial property. So we still need to make progress, because you think of all the small businesses that are in large multi-tenant facilities, they are paying significant property tax burdens. The small employer on Main Street has a significant property tax burden. So we do need to be mindful of the property tax. And when you look at how the state legislature can address or reduce Minnesota business property taxes, there's really two direct levers that you can pull. One would be to change the classification rates of properties, so reduce the commercial industrial class rate, make it closer to residential homestead property. The second is in this bill is reducing the statewide general levy, or the statewide property tax, as it's commonly called. The first method has some really difficult shifting of property tax burdens associated with it. And so it makes it much more complicated to do than the latter, which is in Senate File 1. So it is, I think, the best way to provide businesses some direct property tax relief and avoid all the unintended consequences that go with Minnesota's property tax classification system. I think if you can fit some reduction of the statewide property tax and the corporate income tax within your budget, I think, again, it will send the right signal to Minnesota companies that we're headed down the right path. In addition, you have to think of these things, especially in the property tax side, as retaining Minnesota companies. Minnesota companies pay the property tax whether or not they're making any profit, and those that are struggling right now really could use some relief, and this is one direct way to provide that for them. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I got a couple of members down already. Mr. Hesse, thank you. I think the most compelling thing that I've heard on the property tax issue, well two thoughts. Number one, particularly from new members, I think there's a general level of surprise, even puzzlement, that the state levies some kind of a business property tax, and so there's a history to that, and I'm not asking you to get into that, but there's a surprise that we even do that, and I appreciate you noting that that's also something we can roll back. But the second point that business owners are making, particularly in this kind of economy, as they struggle through a recession, is that they might not be making an income, but they do have to keep paying this property tax. And Mr. Hesse, this property tax, the statewide business property tax, has a built-in inflator. Am I saying that the right way? How would you describe that? It keeps going up. That's how I want to describe it.
Mr. Chair and members, correct. The state general levy is indexed for inflation, so it will increase by the rate of growth in the, I think it's the implicit price deflator for state and local government purchases.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hesse. I have Senator Craig.
Thank you, Chairman Michelle. And I would direct this maybe a comment and a question to both Mr. Hesse or Ms. Larson. But I'm referencing Senate File Number 1. And what we're trying to do with Senate File Number 1 is improve the overall business climate in Minnesota as compared to other states. Now, I know this is somewhat of a moving target because almost every state is doing some things to try to improve their overall business climate at the same time. If we were to pass Senate File Number 1 as it is right now, where would that put us, do you know, in the ranking of the 50 states? And do you have kind of a pretty good feel for what the other states are doing?
Mr. Hesse, you want to take that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Kreif, on the property tax, I'm not sure it's going to make any material difference in our state ranking. I didn't see a revenue estimate on the dollar amount of the reduction, at least in the materials that I saw at the table. But my guess is since the statewide property tax is just a smaller part of the overall tax burden that Minnesota businesses face, we may drop a notch or two, but I wouldn't expect us with this, immediately to drop a significant amount or possibly not even at all in the overall rankings. The over time that will change if this. Provision would stay in law, and as you freeze the level of the tax and go forward, then it may have some more significant ranking reductions as you move forward.
Ms. Larson, did you want to have something to add to Senator Craig?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, on the corporate tax, again, the rate drops about 1%, I think, in the first year, and then it ratchets down. And once we get down to that 4.9, would be probably middle of the pack or even better. In the first year, like I said, we might not drop much in the rankings, but we definitely drop out of third place for sure.
Senator Kraft, did you have a follow-up?
No, I'll just make a comment again. I just want to reiterate that the other states are all doing things at the same time to improve their overall business climates and grow jobs. And I just want to caution us to not think that we're aiming at a specific target, because this is going to be a moving target, and I think whenever we can improve our business climate here, we need to do it in order to grow businesses, which grow private sector jobs.
I have Senator Lilly next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Larson, Mr. Hesse, thank you very much for joining us today. We've had a number of conversations, and you've highlighted a number of the topics or conversations that have come up. But one of the things that's been consistent in these conversations is that businesses need a visibility. They need a level playing field. They need to know what field they are playing on and what the rules are. And as they are changing, it becomes more difficult for them to look forward and to invest in creating new jobs. And that's what we're all here talking about, is creating new jobs. So your members are listening to the conversation, I hope, what is happening in this committee, what's happening in the legislature. Should this bill move forward that we are talking about, are the members agreeing generally with what we're saying? Are we moving the target enough that they are feeling the stability starting to come back at a level that they can, again, look at hiring? I'm trying to get a feel for, what are your members saying about what is happening at the Capitol, what is happening in this committee? Are we doing the right things? Are we on the right track? Or is there more that needs to be on the table?
Yeah. Mr. Lilly, Chairman.
I appreciate that. Ms. Larson, he's teed up a lot for you, and I'll note that we're only about 3 weeks into this. I don't know if anyone's ready to give us high grades yet, but I hope they're open to it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Lilly, yes, we're obviously tracking what you're doing and very appreciative of the efforts. Chairman Michelle has talked a lot about businesses needing certainty, and that is part of it as well. There have been a lot of proposals, honestly, floated around this legislature in the past several years that would be very detrimental to many of our members, and that causes people a lot of concern. I do think we're seeing some optimism, and we're seeing some growth, and it's helpful to have the legislature be talking about legislation that would actually reduce the cost of doing business as opposed to increase it. We understand that there's a long way to go before a final budget is agreed to. We appreciate the efforts. And some of our members have said, you know, part of the problem is that we are continually faced with these potential proposals that cause people a lot of concern. And so that's also part of it, is making sure that some of that stuff doesn't pass.
And Senator Lilly, just as a follow-up, the biggest voice at the Capitol is going to come out about February 15th with a budget, and I'm sure job creators all over Minnesota are going to be watching as to what Governor Dayton is proposing in this area, and that's probably more important than any one bill that we've thrown in. But I will also note, and this gets a little bit into the rest of our week, the governor did sign an executive order yesterday on streamlining and regulatory relief. And a lot of what he signed on that executive order is actually reflected in Senate File 1. So that's good and quick action. And we have asked... So tomorrow in this committee, Commissioner Paul Ossin, who's the commissioner of PCA, is going to come in and describe that executive order a little more and what went into that. So we will have a chance to talk about that particular item tomorrow. And then, of course, those very issues of permits and regulations were one of the reasons that are pushing us north for our committee hearing on Friday. So we'll take some more testimony on that. The time is going short, but I assume Senator Ms. Larson and Mr. Hissey can stay with us a few more minutes. I have Senator Cohen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple questions, if I might. And let me just make it clear to Mr. Hissey and Ms. Larson, I'm not adverse to looking at the corporate tax structure. At one point, I was one of the chief authors of the single factor legislation X number of years ago. So I don't presume to be an expert, but I hope I have a little bit of a sense of some of this. But the difficulty we find ourselves in now is how to juxtapose what might be great corporate tax policy at a time that the emphasis is on kickstarting the economy and creating jobs. So I guess the first question, Mr. Chairman, if I might, is relative to Senate File 1. If we were to pass that bill tomorrow, can we quantify the jobs created? And let me put it in a context. I've not been a member of the Democratic caucus that has jumped up and down about passing the biggest bonding bill year after year after year. But I think every economist in Minnesota, the major economist, certainly Tom Stinson, the state's chief economist, and many of the people on the Council of Economic Advisors, having gone to those meetings, I've listened to the discussion on the part of the economists, as well as national economists, will suggest that to kickstart an economy, you look at the construction industry. And certainly what nobody here can argue against is that the two parts of Minnesota's economy that have been most affected in this recession have been construction and manufacturing, as opposed to, say, the early 80s, where it was farming and mining, somewhat more regional factors of the economy. So if we were to take one versus the other, one of the demands I would make of the governor is to quantify the jobs created. I think we've tried to do a little bit of that with our bonding bills over the last several years. So can you contrast if we lower the corporate income tax right now versus a bonding bill, what's the difference in job creation now as opposed to 10 years from now?
And Senator Cohen has been consistent in asking for numbers and figures. I'm not sure the answer can be much different now than it was a couple weeks ago But let's keep driving towards that. Ms. Larson or Mr. Hesse, who wants to take a shot at that?
And Mr. Chairman, we have different witnesses, and we're into the session. We've had the introduction of Senate File 1, so I'm curious to know.
Yeah, Senator Cohen, I think it's an absolutely a fair question, and I'm sure they've been wrestling with how to answer that, and that's something that we're going to be dealing with going forward.
Sure.
Mr. Hesse.
Mr. Chair and Senator Cohen, I think it's really difficult to estimate the impact on jobs from a reduction in these taxes. I think you could run some, you know, economic models to figure that out, at least have one estimate. You know, Deed has a REMI model at its disposal, and that could be used, I imagine, to, you know, figure out what a change in tax policy would do, at least have one estimate of what a change in tax policy would do. But so we don't, at least I don't have any number, you know, in mind that of jobs that would be created by these changes. However, I think the thing to focus on is what the state really can do is improve its climate so that when the country comes out of recession, or I guess technically we're out, but as the economy improves, that Minnesota is in a better position to have jobs created here rather than elsewhere. And that's where reductions in the tax burden, addressing the permitting issue, really comes into play, is when the economy's going to grow and will start to create jobs, you know, in the coming years. We want Minnesota to look a lot better than it does now for job creation opportunities.
Senator Cohen, I'm going to ask you to hold off for a second. I've got three more members who want to get something on the table. So if you can, I know you know how to talk to get to these two, and I know you will. Let me just have make sure that Senator Peterson and then Senator Kelash and Senator Howe have a chance to be a part of this, and I just want to be cognizant of the time. So thank you for indulging me, Senator Cohen. Senator Peterson.
Yes, I just wanted to make a comment in regard to the property tax issue. This is a study that I have done in St. Cloud, serving on the St. Cloud City Council, and as much as I appreciate Mr. Hesse and Ms. Larson's testimony, I would encourage my colleagues is to simply just pick up the phone and call your own city assessor and ask them what the property taxes are in their commercial or industrial district and compare that to what it is in a residential district. You know, I've done this. It is, and in St. Cloud, I would argue it's far more than three times, as Ms. Larson mentioned, because I know for a particular property I dealt with, a restaurant that's right across the tracks from a residential district, their property taxes in that situation are seven and eight times of the exact same size building directly across the tracks. And so, please, I'd like to encourage my colleagues is to pick up the phone and find out what that property tax is in your own district. Don't trust them. Trust your assessor back in your hometown. And secondly, to address Senator Cohen's concern there, I manufacture construction materials. And since 2006, things have not changed. You know, and quite frankly, you know, to offer more encouragement to my colleagues, things will not change until we do something differently. And what we are hearing here today is a different idea than what we've had in the last 4 years. And I think it's time to try something different, because what we have been doing is not working to help manufacturing and construction, which is an industry I work in every day. So please, let's try something different, Chair.
Senator Kelash.
Mr. Chair, I have just a couple of things.
Can you make it one, Senator Kelash?
Well, you want me to incorporate the two?
Yeah, do that. I'm sure you have some creativity in how you articulate this.
A couple of things. We have a budget crisis, and one of the things that I'd be curious about is if there is an alternative to do these cuts and make them budget neutral. And the other thing that keeps coming up, and that is that the business community wants an educated workforce and highly educated group of people. Currently, tuition in Minnesota public colleges and whatnot are the highest of any of the surrounding states and in the Big Ten, I believe. And so how do we get people able to afford tuition at the universities and do these tax cuts? And if there is another more acceptable way of making this neutral, I'd like to hear that.
Well, and on that point, Senator Kelash, I know Senator Langseth has introduced a bill that would actually repeal the corporate or business income tax. and I haven't seen a detailed version of it, but I believe he pays for it, you know, using our static fiscal forecast right now, but with exemptions. Okay, so what I want to tell you is that we need to bring those kind of ideas, which you're alluding to in your question, in front of this committee, and I'll commit to do that.
Michelle, I mean, I asked, would like the witnesses to be able to respond.
That's okay. Absolutely. I just thought it'd be important to add that.
I'll check it out.
Yeah.
Let me take a stab at the last part of the question. I don't know if Joe has any thoughts on the
Mr.
first.
Hesse.
You know, as you're building the budget this year, you know, I would expect that the state grant program, for example, on higher education would become a larger priority because that's one area of the budget that can protect lower-income individuals' access to higher education. So if you're looking at ways to use priority-based budgeting, I would think that the state grant program would rise a little bit more to the top so we can make sure access is preserved for those that have the least ability to afford it.
Senator Howe.
Mr. Chair, I'll
you
keep
get
it
the
short.
Last word.
Fabulous. Might be a good note to end on. I just wanted to say that in Senate File 1, you know, there's a lot more than just taxes. You know, there's some certainty. We talk a lot about consumer confidence, and we need to instill confidence in our business sector. And I think Senate File 1 is already starting to have an impact. We see that with the governor's executive order. And so I'd ask my colleagues, you know, we need to keep – I think we're heading in the right direction. You know, and I don't care who gets the credit for it as long as we move forward. And so if some of the things that we're discussing on Senate File 1 helps the governor to do an executive order, then I think we're taking the right steps. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Howe. Senator Cohen.
A brief follow-up.
Do you want to be the last word?
Well, Mr. Chairman, you thank me for indulging you, which is on my top 10 list for the session.
Senator Cohen, I don't know if it's last word or last question, but I know somebody wants to use it.
Without getting into a speech, I just want to follow up to Mr. Hesse's response to my question. And with all due respect, I didn't find it acceptable to kind of the ambiguity and the indeterminate nature. We have the Chamber of Commerce. We got the business partnership. Those organizations have certainly more ability than I have to do a projection in terms of job creation. With a bonding bill, we can quantify that to some extent, whether that's useful or not in terms of the job creation. But if the issue is job creation, and we're not looking for fiscal notes, that would suggest how many we don't have that requirement. But it sure would be useful to know what we can expect in 1 year, 2 years, 10 years, 20 years, if we eliminate the corporate income tax. And that's why I asked the question, that there has to be some ability to quantify that. Because, Mr. Chairman, now the one part of my speech, the speech part of it is, we've got people who are hurting right now. And to suggest that if we do something in 10 years, 15 years, whatever, things will be better, will not help the people who are hurting today. Your organizations have the ability to provide some of that quantification. I hope this committee can get some of that.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, Senator Cohen. And members, one of the things we did talk about at the outset was how during this session we're going to talk a lot about cuts. Some people are going to talk a lot about taxes, and we want to add a third topic, which is growth. And how do you define that? Is it a new kind of math? Is it a new kind of formula? Is it a new discussion? But we have to find a way to make this economy grow. And that'll have a direct impact on the other two topics, taxes and spending and cuts. So I look forward to continuing those discussions with all of you starting tomorrow. Committee adjourned.
Work is going to be tough.